Podcast Network Asia.
Hi, everybody. I'm Edric.
I'm Joy.
Welcome to
Family Unboxed,
where we talk about everything family, from the light stuff, the fun stuff, to even the heavy and controversial stuff. Because our desire is to encourage families and see the world changed
one family at a time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of
Family Unboxed.
And today we're going to talk about love. Why are we going to talk about love? You know, we have been seeing through this season, especially where, you know, people are looking to things like skin hunger, which is what a psychologist I was with in a panel talked about. People are looking for affection, for love. And we've been invited to speak recently on this topic. And we realized how it's so important to clarify this definition so that even as we apply it in our marriages, in our parenting, it becomes something clear. So let's define it. Here's our definition. The definition we like to work with is love is a commitment to an imperfect person for their highest good, which may often require sacrifice.
Just for the record, we didn't come up with this definition. We are borrowing it.
From go ahead.
from my dad and mom, who wrote the book Motivate, 8 Secrets to Successful Parenting.
Yes, you seemed uncertain about that for a little bit. Yeah, so, but and they've used this even across different preaching platforms. I've heard my father-in-law speak about this, and we love the definition. So Joy's very wise in making sure that we don't own this definition, but we love it, as we said, because it makes it very clear. So we're going to break it down into those four parts, some four words from the definition which we need to embrace. First is commitment. Second is imperfect person. Third is highest good. And then finally is sacrifice. So those four sets of words will be the way we unpack this podcast with you all as you listen. So let's start with the first. Love is a commitment. What does this mean, honey baby?
Well, commitment really means that it's unconditional. I think that, you know, when you and I were standing at the altar saying our wedding vows, it was very easy to say I love you back then because for the most part, we knew a little bit about each other, but we didn't know everything there was to know about each other. We didn't know each other's, you know, weird quirks and maybe more irritating personality traits until we were years down the road in marriage. So I think to be able to say I love you now means that, you know, I love you as you are fully known to me and vice versa. And I choose to love you still, no matter what we've gone through. And to be honest, at the beginning, we've shared this in numerous talks, but we had a difficult time with our marriage because we did see the realities of our personality differences. And it was like from the honeymoon stage, it quickly became reality stage and reaction stage. And we started to really feel frustrated with one another and wanted to change each other because it was inconvenient. Each other's personalities was inconvenient or bothersome or just plain irritating. So, you know, I remember having a conversation with the Lord one time and saying, you know, I wouldn't mind submitting to Edric and honoring his authority as a husband and respecting him, if you would just change him and make him a nicer person. Because he used to be the kind of guy that would get really irritated at even the smallest things. Maybe it would be that he was hot or hungry or tired, and he would get snappy or abrasive in his tone. And that was very hurtful to me because I grew up in a home that was ultra, maybe to a fault, positive. And so
I like how you said maybe to a fault. We'll unpack that later.
Which is another negative thing that you're saying right now. So just that positive environment maybe magnified how Edric had a tendency to be critical. And I felt like as a wife, I couldn't live up to his expectations, or I was not good enough, or I wasn't being affirmed and appreciated for the things I was doing right. So it was very wearying for me. And at a certain point, you know, I was just tired. And I know Edric was also tired of me trying to change him and correct these things in him and, react to them. So both of us really had so much to improve on. And I know he also had a conversation with God. And I think God spoke to him the same words administered to him in the same way, where he told me, at least, he said to me, you know, Joel, you're really focused on everything that you want Edric to change, but you need to look at yourself in the mirror and see that you have so much to improve on. There's many areas you need to change also. So leave Edric to me, and you choose to do your part and to be a good wife, to honor him, to be submissive towards him, and let me handle Edric. And Edric was praying the same prayer. He was praying that I would change, that I would also, you know, improve. But God also showed him areas where he needed to improve. So,
and how did you know that?
Because you admitted that to me.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you did. You did.
Okay,
I thought you'd become more positive.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So I share all that because at the beginning, you know, at the beginning you have all these lovely feelings, right? When you stand at the altar, and even when you have your children, when you give birth to them, you're so excited to be a parent. You have that feeling that you think is love. And love is also a feeling, but it's really more an action word. And it has to do with choosing to be committed to the people in your life. And for Edric and myself, we've chosen to stay committed to one another. We're going to be going on 20 years married next year. So that's pretty exciting. And it doesn't feel that long, to be honest. And when it comes to our did you just do a weird face like you weren't sure? Okay, we'll talk about that later. So as for our children, it's also a choice, you know, seeing their different personalities, and sometimes they can rub us the wrong way. They display personality quirks that can be annoying as well. And I'm sure they feel the same way about us at times. So in our entire family, love has to be a commitment. We have to be committed to one another. And I think during the quarantine, you've probably seen a lot of the differences that really irk you in your marriage or your children or people who live with you at home. So there was a point in time during the quarantine where Edric and I were sitting on the balcony because we used to have our dates there at the beginning of the quarantine, just sit out there and talk. And I started breaking down, and I was sharing with him how, you know, I think I've had a lot of wounding in our marriage at the beginning that I haven't really expressed to him. And I was crying, and he was shocked because he didn't realize how his abrasiveness and his negativity at the beginning had really hurt me, and as well as the children. So we had a good talk about it. We were able to open up and restore things, and he asked for my forgiveness. And I think I also asked for forgiveness for being reactive, because that's my flaw, right? So then it was a choice again, right, at that point to say, okay, I choose to forgive you, and I still choose to love you. So that's what it means. And choosing to love one another means doing our part to meet each other's needs. But I'll get into that later when we talk about loving one another for each other's highest good. And then I just wanted to close this little part by saying that we all have circles of control and circles that are outside of our control. So when you think of marriage or parenting, we have to do our part 100%, even if our children or our spouse doesn't do their 100%. Because it takes 100% plus 100% to make 100%. That's the unique math of relationships. We can't think of it as I'll do my 50% and then you do your 50% and that will make it 100%.
So I'm glad that Joy wrapped up this first portion of love is a commitment by talking about that number. I'm a numbers guy, right? And it's very important to help remind ourselves that, again, it's not 50 plus 50 equals 100, but instead 100 plus 100 equals 100. Commitment and this love concept, which we are, again, embracing, has everything to do with I will love you and I will choose to do what I know I'm supposed to do that is right in the marriage or in the parenting. Not so much because of how you'll respond or not so much for your sake, but because that is my 100% and I'm doing it as unto the Lord, right? That is so important. So love is a commitment. I've loved that definition of it because there are moments where you don't feel like it. Let's be honest. I will tell my wife Joy, and I will look at her with all sincerity in moments where we have tension or conflict, and I will say, I love you, that will never change, but I don't like you right now. Right, honey? Validate.
Yes.
And she's done the same for me, which is the truth, right? So once again, it's so important to embrace this first part of the definition of love, which we are proposing and sharing with you all today, which is it is a commitment. Even in moments where you don't feel it, you will choose to do what you know is right. In the marriage, you will love as an action word. I love how Joy used that earlier. So, which lends itself now to the second part. Love is a commitment to an imperfect person. And Joy talked a little bit about that earlier, how the reality is, and we need to embrace this when we love someone, right, in our families, whether it's our spouse or our children, that we are imperfect. That's the reality. I think the more we're able to embrace that, the less frustrated we become. That doesn't excuse the person from acting in imperfect ways, obviously, or even ourselves. But just being able to embrace that manages expectations very well. And it allows us to be more understanding, more forgiving of the people who we are loving. So if it's in the marriage, for example, it is sobering, but also refreshing to know that, you know, because Joy and I are not perfect, we will not fully meet each other's needs. There's just no way. Or even desires. I love the concept also of what is called the you marriage, not the I marriage, where many of us come into the marriage thinking of what I will get from the other person instead of what I will give, or focusing on you. And I learned this later on when, you know, after being very frustrated in my first year of marriage with Joy, where, you know, honestly, if we were not Christians, we would probably not be together, because it really was rocky seeing our personalities come out and the differences and the opinions. And, you know, I realized that a large part of the frustration for me, honestly, was because I was expecting something. I was expecting her to do things a certain way for me. And I won't go into comparisons, because that's not something you want to do either in marriage, right? Compared to your mother or your siblings. But in the same way Joy had a culture in her home, we had a culture also. And because it wasn't, things weren't happening the way I expected or I was used to, then there was that frustration. Until I realized and learned this principle of the you marriage, where instead of focusing on what Joy will do for me or my kids will do for me, right, I will focus on you. So what will I do for my wife in the case of marriage more than what she will do for me? And counterintuitively, when we focus more on that, then it becomes a lot more fun, actually, and a lot more fulfilling, even if the tension will be there, right? There are moments. And this has, again, this is a practical way to apply the concept of imperfect persons. Because we are imperfect, instead of wanting them to do something for us, which they will not fully be able to do because they're imperfect, we instead focus on what we can do for them. That's one practical thing. And what about ourselves? Because we are imperfect, in order for us to improve, as I mentioned earlier, right, it doesn't excuse us from doing all sorts of crazy things in marriage or in our families. We want to have a healthy session where we can talk as a couple or with our children or amongst the children, amongst themselves, asking, how can I improve? Because we are imperfect. And it is in that question we're able to now realize the blind sides, the things where we thought we were maybe okay in, that we can now work on. And, you know, there is a humility, honestly, involved in that I was not used to until I learned this method or this system, if you will. But once you do it, it really changes you. So that moment that Joy talked about on our balcony in the pandemic, where we could not do our date nights, which is where we would usually ask how we can improve, to add a little bit more detail and drama to that moment, when I was asking her, how can I improve? I'm used to her saying, well, you know, you've been doing well this week, and she might highlight one or two things and, you know, it will be good. But during that time, because the pandemic had just hit, to be honest, I was going through stress and frustration. And because of that, you know, it was leaking out. I would be, you know, the analogy of a coffee cup or a cup that's so full that any little thing that, you know, pokes at it will spill over, and that hot spilling content will affect the people around you. So I was like that. I was getting irritable, raising my voice. I wasn't cursing or screaming or, you know, violent, but it was coming out, and it was tense in the house. And, you know, I wasn't noticing that so much until that moment where Joy was like, well, you know, this week, the way you spoke to me and your tone and the way you spoke to the kids, you know, they hurt. It hurt them and it hurt me. And I was like, what? And honestly, I was a little bit of in shock, because, you know, I was used to her saying, you've been improving and in various areas. And it's usually a lighter portion, a lighter conversation. But when she said that, I was really shocked. And so I looked at her, and then she kept going. She said, and she started to tear up, right? As she was sharing earlier, she started to tear up, and she now put the whole thing together. And when she had said all of that it had been years, you know, all throughout our marriage and all throughout my parenting journey, my instinct, and here's a practical tip around this system of how can I improve, do not defend yourself. If you're asking your kids how you can improve or your spouse, do not defend yourself. The instinct is to defend. And that's what I wanted to do, honestly. I wanted to say, you have no idea what's going on in my life. You know, you don't have no idea the pressure. I'm the provider. I'm the one who's trying to think about what we can do to pivot and how to help the employees and all these people, et cetera, et cetera. So, and the family, of course, also. So instead of defending myself, I silenced my desire and I applied the rule where you're not supposed to explain. And instead I listened. And I tried to really put myself in her shoes. And I think for the first time in our marriage, what made that remarkable for both of us is because I really tried to understand her instead of trying to find a way to explain myself away, which I can do quite well because I'm good with words and charming her and people because I know her buttons. I decided to really listen sincerely. And when I tried to view it from her lenses, the damage that she talked about and the hurt through all those years of marriage and parenting, I honestly started to tear as well. And when I started to tear, I really felt bad. I said to her, you know, honey, I feel so bad because I can't take back all those years. And, you know, I didn't realize how damaging it has been. But, and this is part of the how can I improve process, as you ask how you can improve and ask you not respond or defend yourself, the way to close it is to reassure the other person that you will. So I said, so honey, will you forgive me for all those years? I will improve. And that's what I did. And I think that's what made it powerful. And I think by God's grace alone, since that time, have I improved, honey?
Yeah, you have. You've improved. You keep improving. It's present progressive.
Present progressive. So I have been improving. Yeah. So that's good. All right. Yes. So this is great. So this podcast is already worth it. I got my wife to say that I have been improving. But really, you know, it is a genuine, sincere desire to see where the person's coming from. And to choose to improve and stand by that as you go. So this is a practical way of applying and embracing this aspect of love where you are saying it is towards an imperfect person. Lowering expectations towards the other person. And instead of focusing on what they will do for you, focus on what you can do for them. And then because you or me, I'm also imperfect, how will I improve? We need to ask and have channels like that towards our spouse, towards our kids. Our kids have also done this amongst themselves and they have been powerful, tearful moments for them to express to each other. There have been hugs, you know, lots of hugs, of course, surrounding that, where the children themselves also apparently have these blind spots they don't see even if they deal with each other every day in a homeschooling environment.
Right. And I think that it's very important to point out that it's impossible to do this if we're not coming from a place of humility. Because when you're saying, you know, love is a commitment to an imperfect person, it's almost like you're labeling other people as imperfect. But when you recognize that you yourself are imperfect, when Edric and I understand that, hey, we also have a lot to improve on, right? We've got so many things that we need to be unconditionally loved for. So that's what makes it work within the family, that we extend unconditional love to each other, but everyone else chooses also to be committed to unconditionally loving one another, because we all know that, hey, all of us have so much to improve on. And I forgot to share this earlier, but when it comes to the circles of control, the parts that we cannot control, the way that people respond or react or their personalities, we surrender that part as we do our own part, what we can control. And what can we control? Our own response, our attitude, our example. We can also control praying for the people in our family. And then, of course, choosing to still move towards one another to build relationship. And this is the part that we're going to talk about, what it means to love someone for their highest good.
But before we proceed, it would be great if you also check out the other shows from Podcast Network Asia.
Hey, you. Sorry to interrupt your podcast listening pleasure. Wonderful choice of podcast, by the way. My name is Sam Oh, and I have a podcast too. It's called The Narrow Door. It's an ecumenical podcast, which means we talk about everything Christian. I mean, I got a panel on everything, so go give it a listen after this one, okay? All right, thanks. See you there.
So highest good, I think we have to cover two aspects of it. The first part is sincerely looking at what will make the other person more like Christ. How will it help them to become better people, right? And then sometimes it may be withholding something that is going to stand in the way of them becoming better people. So let's start off with that one. For example, there are times when our kids ask for something. And even though they're super cute and it's very easy for us to want to give in because we delight in seeing them.
Especially for our babies. Yeah. Like who?
Kaylee, like, right. We delight in seeing their reactions. We wanna be a blessing to them. But we always have to assess, is this really going to be for their good? I remember when Elijah, our oldest son, was really getting into computer programming. And he said, Mom, you know, I really want to learn more about computer programming because I really think that I'd like to do hacking. And I was a little bit shocked because he's a great kid, really nice guy. But he was very fascinated with the darker side of programming. And so we had to really process this with him. And we had to make sure that we walked him through this whole process of learning how to code, to program, that we also kept him on a leash, not to control him completely, but to make sure that he understood that things like hacking is not something you want to use your talents and abilities to do. So we process that with him. But that's what it also means to love somebody for their highest good, right? If you know that something or an act or an item or a physical thing, something material is not going to be good for your children, then don't give it. In fact, we were counseling a couple recently and they really want to give their son a phone for his birthday. And their reasoning was, well, he's never had a new phone. But with the phone that he has had, he's been going behind their backs to chat with friends whom they're not approving of. He hides conversations. He struggles with some stuff on social media. So we encouraged the parents and we said, you know what, why don't you say, instead of giving it right away, because it's not the right time. The intention is good. You want to be a blessing to him. But the timing is not okay because it won't be for his highest good. So why don't you wait first? Since you have a deal with him, let him show that he's become responsible in this area. He can be really truthful about being on a device. And then you can say, you know, because I really want to bless you and I've actually held on to this, but because I've seen that you've really tried your best to be responsible, to be truthful with the use of your gadget, now I'd really like to give this to you. So that has to be something that's hard for us as parents because it's so much easier to give in to what our kids want when they want it. But a part of loving them for their highest good means sometimes holding back. And then there's the part about loving them for their highest good by doing things that you know will really be a blessing to them, that really will be for their good.
That they enjoy.
For example, our kids, they love to do games together, play strategy games. And the other, sometimes it's not just board games, but recently with their friends or their cousins, once in a while, they'll play this game called Among Us. And you've probably heard about it. It's really popular right now. And I do not like computer games. In fact, it is one thing I really, can I say the word hate, but really, really do not enjoy computer games. I've never enjoyed them. And my husband, Edric, he's like, hey, for family night, why don't we play like for a few minutes, maybe half an hour or so, let's play Among Us with the kids. They'll be so happy. Play with us too. And I was like, babe, please, please do not make me play that game. I do not want to play. And he's like, hon, come on. You know, we have to get into their world too. And they'll be so happy. They'll see that you really want to spend time with them and do things that they enjoy doing. And I was kind of forced into it. But while we were playing, I did see the expressions of the kids. And I had no idea what I was doing. I don't even know how to move the little guy around. I think I died several times on that game because I just didn't know what to do. But you could just see the faces of the kids. They were just so happy we were together as a family, doing this family thing. And, you know, bonding together as a family, having healthy bonding times, that is for our children's highest good, right? So these are the things that we have to ask God for wisdom. You know, if my child wants something or there's something I can do with them, if I really truly love them, am I doing it so that it will produce their highest good? And this may also mean in instances not losing our temper when we're frustrated with them and annoyed, like when I'm homeschooling and I feel the rising anger because I'm frustrated with something my child is not or is doing, then I have to always ask myself, you know, I want my children to really love God and to follow God. And that's one of the reasons why we are homeschooling. So if I were to shout at my children to be really irritated with them, will that make them want to love God more, or will that push them away from God? And I know that I want them to love God, and that is their highest good. But if I were to lose my temper, that will be pushing them away from Him. So I always have to ask myself before I'm going to, or before I feel like doing that, hey, just check yourself, Joy. You know what? Is this really for your child's highest good? Are you just thinking about yourself? Because when you think of the word or the phrase highest good, it's all about selflessness and not thinking about just what I want, as Edric said, in the relationship, what I can get out of it, but what I can do to be a blessing to the people in my life, to my spouse, to my children.
Thanks, honey. So let's wrap up with the fourth part. We've looked at love is a commitment. That's the first set of words. And then it is to an imperfect person. And then we went to this third part, which is for their highest good. So we are committed to them. We choose to love them, even if we know that they're imperfect. Look into their highest good. And finally, which often or may often require sacrifice. I put those words may and often together because on the one hand, when you look at it from a third party standpoint, you know, you're just watching it, what you will have to do, and this is why Joy started out with the picture of you can't really say I love you at the altar when you first get married because you haven't really experienced all of the pains, the challenges, which come with marriage and the commitment. But once you've gone through the years and you've been able to look back, we're going to be 2 decades. We've been mentored by couples who have been married 4 or 5 decades, you know, and even as they are enduring the marriage, they're also enjoying it. And part of what I've seen and what we've learned, which is what we're sharing with you, is outwardly it looks like sacrifice when you have a you marriage, right? I talked about that earlier. When you're looking to the other person's needs, when you're looking to their highest good, as Joy expounded, it outwardly seems tiring. It seems so altruistic and so, you know, I think in Filipino, the expression is para ka nagpapaka martir, right? It's like, I'm just gonna carry my cross and this is my burden in life and it sounds so agonizing. And the reality is it can be. You know, there was a moment where in our marriage, Joy went through a massive surgical operation, which almost cost her life. And I had to step back and scale back a lot of the things I was doing, whether it's work, fun, play, ministry, to attend to her, you know, while at the hospital and even while she was recovering at home. And it was a sacrifice. Things I never would have imagined doing. You know, I would have to hold her and make sure I would guide her and hold even the dextrose. I would have to check what's called a Jackson Pratt and help make sure that it could be replaced. You know, this is something that was directly connected to her insides and had fluid coming out of it. So there were many things.
You don't
things.
Have to share all that.
I just wanted to visualize.
Really gross.
I wanted to visualize the fact that it is, you know, from a third party standpoint, it seems like a sacrifice. And there are moments where you have to get your hands dirty, you know, or you have to experience some level of, okay, them versus me. And this happens even in parenting, right? Many parents might even think of this instinctively where they will sacrifice a portion of their meal, maybe when financial, economic circumstances are difficult so that the kids can eat, right? This is something that is very inherent in us as parents. So there is that element of sacrifice where we will give up what we want or what we value or what we like in order to let the other person have what they like or what they value or what they need at that time. So that's what it means. Now, I say outwardly because if we are able to view it properly, and I'm going to close with this. We're going to close with this in a little bit. We will see how it seems like it often requires sacrifice because you have to make a choice to love, to forgive, you know, to endure, to look at their good versus yours. But it's not. It can also not be. And before I do that, my wife's going to say some few words before we wrap up.
Yeah, I wanted to add that there was a time when Edric was doing so many jobs because he was on TV. He was on 2 shows and he was also doing business. And the kids felt like at a certain point he was just too busy and he wasn't available to them anymore. So they actually approached him and said, you know, Dad, why do you have so many jobs? And my oldest son said, you know, Dad, I'm just going to pray for you. And basically what they were trying to say was, Dad, can you cut back? Can you scale back? Now, it was a sacrifice for Edric to even consider it because financially it was very rewarding and it was fun job. He loved the perks of that job. The second show that he was doing, it was a morning show. He loved meeting the people. He loved all the freebies and you know, getting treated a certain way also because he was on television. We're just being honest. And I remember he talked to me about it and he said, you know, I think I need to stop. And I remember he said it to me in tears because in his heart of hearts, he knew that the children were more important. Our family was more important and time with us was more important. And so he made that decision to quit that second show. And when he told the kids, I don't think they realized the gravity of what he had done. And they just kind of just like, oh, okay. And for Edric, it was like, wow, I just gave up like quite a bit of money and quite a bit of opportunity there. And the kids don't even realize it. But we talked and we processed it as a couple. And we knew that at the end of the day, it was a sacrifice, but it was done because he really, truly loves our children. And it's his unconditional commitment to them, you know, for their highest good. And that was the bit that really required the sacrifice.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the lines that I've shared many times, but really spoke to me in that season that Joy brought us back to was, there are seasons in our life where we need to say no to good things in order to say yes to greater things. And I think that captures a large part of this definition of love also. Sometimes the things we sacrifice aren't necessarily the bad things, because obviously if it's a bad thing, we don't want to do it, but it's good things. But we do it for the greater things. And for me, and for us, the challenge is, what is that greater thing? What is the higher good of the person, or the highest good that you're looking at for my kids? They need their dad, you know? I mean, who else is going to be a father to them in this season while they're all growing? So I sacrificed that in order to put back. And, you know, as a wonderful highlight to that whole experience, right? My son, Elijah, as I gave this all up, and I was actually nominated for this prestigious award called the 10 Outstanding Young Men. I was nominated. I was excited, but I didn't get it. So as I shared with my family
and
to pray.
Cried. I think you cried too.
No, I didn't cry. I will not overshare this crying thing, babe. You're so funny. So as I shared to my kids that I wanted to get the award, they were kind of excited, rooting me on. And then I shared to them that I didn't. I was sharing how disheartened I was and sad. I was actually just telling my wife this, but my son Elijah heard it. You know, he looked at me and he said, Dad, wait. So you feel bad that you didn't get that award, right? I said, yep. And he's like, well, Dad, I want you to know you are the most important man in the world to me.
Babe, okay, that's not what the words he said. He said, babe, you don't need that award. No, he said to you, Dad, you don't need that award because you are the most outstanding man in the world to me.
Yes. So there you go. So that's my wife, the word master. So that's what he said. And of course, that deeply touched my heart. It made me realize it is worth it. And that's what I wanted to now close with is, it can seem like a sacrifice outwardly, but when we frame it well, this concept of love being a commitment or a choice for their highest good towards an imperfect person, and often, or it may require this idea of sacrifice, we actually are able to benefit from the joys and the deep sense of fulfillment, knowing that this is what love is and this is what love does. There's something it does to us also, even as we choose to do it. That is deeply refreshing and a blessing. Like that classic case of my son. When we choose to do what we know is right, the emotions follow. This is a principle we've shared maybe in other podcasts also. The principle of motion before emotion, right? Where we choose to do what is right, which we know, and then the emotions follow. And when they do, the sacrifice becomes worth it. And maybe it doesn't even look like a sacrifice anymore. And to be honest, when I was telling my wife this, we were debating on whether to use the word often requires sacrifice because of that perspective. As Joy shared, we've been married almost 20 years. And I'll be honest in sharing how, you know, I've experienced some of the greatest hurts from her and she from me. But I look at her even now and I would marry her all over again in a heartbeat. And the other day we talked about how marriage can be better than the honeymoon stage. You know, once you're able to go through the battles and the scars and emerge from that, still choosing each other because it is what it is. Commitment to an imperfect person, which is for their highest good and often and requires this effort, this sacrifice, right? So,
you know, we really need to talk about this bit because we really can't give of this love unless we have experienced this love ourselves. Oh, you're going to talk about that?
Yes, I was. Yes, I'm looking at my wife right now because in that wonderful moment that I already was talking about, I was going to do that. Do you want to talk about it or shall I? I'll talk about it.
You talk about it.
Okay, I'll talk about it. All right, great. So I was saying, and I love how we are on the same page, even on that point, you know, the real reason why it does not necessarily have to be a endured, labor-intensive, you know, sacrifice in the purest form of the word, it can be something enjoyed and deeply fulfilling when we realize that we cannot give what we do not have. And for us to fully love this way, we need to have been fully loved first. And here's the catch. We can't get that love from other people because we're imperfect. But we can get it from God. And that's the beauty of this definition. It is actually from Him. So as He is able to love us, it is a choice that He's made. He doesn't need us. We don't do anything for Him really because He's God. He's chosen to do that, to love us, even if we don't deserve it, even if we've messed up or we continue to mess up. That's love. He chooses that. And it is to an imperfect person, wow, we are the most imperfect, especially compared to Him. And, you know, it is for our highest good. Can you believe that He would do it because He wants to bless us, because He wants what is best for us? And He does all this for us. He's created the universe, you know? And so, you know, and you know, the ultimate expression of that is He sent His Son, Jesus, His only Son, to pay the price for our sins. It says, for God so loved the world that He gave us His only Son, Jesus, that whoever would believe in Him will not perish, but have eternal life. That is our highest good, that we will not be doomed in the fires of hell. So this is the perfect, perfect picture of love. And it even says in 1 John 4:19, we love because He first loved us. So this is so important as we look at the definition of love in our marriage, in our families, with our children, or them amongst each other, or even them towards whoever they might meet someday to start a family with. We need to be able to center it on these key words, but have the foundation of really making sure that we have that love first so that we might be able to give it. And in order for us to experience it once again, we need to be able to say, okay, God, I want to receive this love that You have for me. Let me experience it. So if you've never done that before, maybe now is the time. Experience that love. Ask Him and receive the gift that He's given us already through His Son Jesus, which is the verse I mentioned earlier. And as you receive that, what He has done and this love, once you've been filled with that, then you can give this kind of love. And it will be the best expression of it because we've seen that this really is the best definition of love that there is out there. It will change your marriages. It will change your relationships with your children and the dynamic amongst each other, as siblings and your family as a whole. So that is love. Let me say it once again. Baby, you want to say it once again? One more time. What's the definition?
Love is an unconditional commitment. I added unconditional. Love is a commitment to an imperfect person for their highest good, which often requires sacrifice.
All right. So baby, I love you.
I love you too.
There you go. I was waiting for that. All right. So we hope you enjoyed this episode again, brought to you by Podcast Network Asia and Podmetrics. See you in the next episode, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.